Attorneys for convicted and now former Philadelphia Congressman Shaka Fatah are seeing a ray of hope in the U.S. Supreme Court's decision today, throwing out the corruption conviction of former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, the justices found that prosecutors in Virginia went too far. And now Fatah's attorneys are hoping that same logic will be applied to the congressman's case.
In the unanimous opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote that if a public official sets up a meeting, calls another public official, or hosts an event for a donor, that shouldn't be seen as bribery.
I find that hard to swallow.
Scott Nelson of the Washington-based consumer advocacy group Public Citizen says wealthy individuals get what they want from public officials in sly ways, and this decision allows that to continue.
You know, it isn't very often that somebody sits down and writes a campaign check where there is a specific, explicit agreement on the part of the office holder that they're going to get something in return.
How does this all relate to Fatah's conviction? Well, specifically with the bribery charges tied to his friend Herb Viderman, who was also convicted. Prosecutors said Fatah hand-delivered a letter to President Obama advocating that Viderman receive a U.S. ambassadorship. Before that, Viderman gave thousands to Fatah, who was financially struggling. Political law attorney Adam Bonin says that sounds a lot like the Virginia case.
A number of the counts related to Herb Viderman now are going to fall.
The bribery piece of Fatah's conviction is just one small part. And even if it is tossed, it probably won't affect the substantial jail time he's facing. Bonin says the court decision draws a bright line for public officials.
They now sort of know, perhaps, how to wink and nod. Just take this meeting. I'm not going to tell you what to do with this meeting.
Giving the president an endorsement letter with a wink and a nod may be fine, but explicitly begging that his friend get a sweet appointment may be not okay. Fatah's attorneys have until mid-July to make new arguments and post-conviction filings. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
The Chester Upland School District has consistently been one of, if not the most distressed district in Pennsylvania for over a decade. This year, battles in court and at the State House sought to restore the Delaware County District from the clutches of a budget deficit that threatened to shut its doors. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports that those efforts helped the district squeak by for one more year, but ultimately, it won't be enough to put it in the black.
All right, stop for a minute. I'm sorry, stop.
It's a steamy June morning, and social science teacher Sherman Lineberry has some do's and don'ts for seniors prepping for that night's graduation ceremony.
You really have nothing to do but pay attention. No phones, no earphones, no texting.
Over 200 students in matching black t-shirts practice processing on and off the field. Listening to the familiar strains of pomp and circumstance, it's easy to forget Chester schools almost didn't open this year. Michelle Pollack grew up in Chester and is now the school district's union rep. She says teachers got some bad news just before classes were set to begin.
The district coming to us saying we may not be able to pay you.
Parents flooded a public meeting demanding answers. Some even promised to take their kids out of the mid-sized school district, 10 minutes southwest of Philadelphia. The tumult died down after the state gave an emergency infusion of cash for salaries. But that doesn't mean it was smooth sailing, says Pollack.
They came to us again in December saying we may not be able to pay you. They came to us again for the summer pay saying we may not be able to pay you.
Chester Upland gets the large majority of its funding from the state. So the budget stalemate in Harrisburg this past year pushed the district to the brink. But making ends meet in Chester Upland is difficult in any year. Revenues just aren't enough to match expenses. Chief Business Administrator Karen DeShulo says last summer, the district predicted Chester Upland's debt would multiply by a factor of 6 in only 2 years.
We are forecasting at the end of 17 to have a deficit fund balance of $50.2 million.
School officials blamed part of that skyrocketing debt on charter schools, which enroll about half of the students in the district. Chester Upland is an extreme example of a common gripe among school districts, that the state's charter law is stacked against them. So This year, Chester Upland sued and successfully argued that the boatload of money it was sending to charters for special education students wasn't actually being spent on those students. The two parties ended up settling and signing a new agreement, saving Chester Upland about $10 million this year. Another win? The state passed a law that changes how it divides up its pot of education funding, including a special $12 million annual supplement just for Chester Upland. In short, those two moves helped the district avoid a debt death spiral, but it still falls millions short for next year. Karen DeShulo says school administrators are trying to come up with new, novel ways to cover basic costs.
One of the things that we're looking to do going forward is to really seek more revenues from private donors.
Chester has so much poverty, she says. Raising local property taxes just can't cover costs.
Well, it's just temporary fixes.
That's biology teacher Pete Cosful, who's been with the district for 23 years.
And if I could be so bold as to say these temporary fixes are just to keep egg off of the faces of those who are giving us these little drips and drops.
He says, as disheartening as the lack of funding is, he tries not to let it affect his classroom.
I had an excellent year academically.
Richard Paquette, a social science teacher in the district, agrees. But he says, as the father of young children himself, the prospect of not getting paid was a nightmare.
Not knowing if I'd be able to pay my mortgage or, you know, have to borrow money from my parents to feed my children, you know, not be able to come to work because I couldn't afford to have my children go to daycare.
He says he stuck it out for his students last fall. But if he had a choice, it's a nightmare he'd rather not repeat. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
Philadelphia's Housing Trust Fund is getting an influx of cash thanks to a deal struck over the weekend between a developer and the Kenney administration. WHYY's Katie Culinary explains.
Earlier this month, the developer, PMC Property Group, tried to go back on an affordable housing commitment it made in exchange for a big zoning bonus for its luxury project on the Delaware waterfront. Housing advocates cried foul. Now, PMC has agreed to pay $3.75 million to Philadelphia's Housing Trust Fund, rather than set aside 25 apartments as affordable units in the luxury One Water Street building. So is the city kicking the can down the road when it comes to affordable housing? Beth McConnell with the Philadelphia Association of Community Development Corporation says it's actually a better deal in the long run that has some trade-offs.
It will take longer to make the funds available for new affordable unit construction, but affordable housing developers have projects ready to go and that they're searching for funding desperately to make them pencil out and make them work.
McConnell says the deal will also go further to help Philadelphians in need. If the developer had set aside those 25 affordable units, the rent still would have been about $1,000 a month.
So that would have given moderate income people an opportunity to live in a really nice apartment building, but the payment to the Housing Trust Fund allows us more flexibility to serve people who are in deeper poverty.
The trust fund helps pay for new affordable housing and projects to fix up older homes. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Delaware lawmakers passed two bills last week intended to improve the mental health landscape in the state. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Ann Hoffman reports.
State Senator Bethany Hall Long says after Christiana Hospital closed a day program for adolescents, her constituents were deeply concerned about the loss of psychiatric care options for young adults. So she and other officials decided to create a mental health task force to address those concerns.
Really, we're quite glad that we did because we discovered that we have a lot of gaps from prenatal all the way to our elders.
Those gaps include a shortage of child psychiatrists in Delaware and no residential treatment center for adolescents with substance abuse problems. One bill will establish a mental health commission, which will provide monitoring and oversight. Hall Long says the commission is meant to continue the work of the task force.
They would be able to come together and make recommendations and work collaboratively with the Department of Health and Social Services, give feedback to the General Assembly, give feedback to the Governor's Office.
Another bill will make permanent a suicide prevention coalition pulled together more than a decade ago. There's a real need for it in Delaware. In 2012, there was an uptick in suicides among adolescents in the southern part of the state, and the Centers for Disease Control came in to assist with an investigation. The senator says these bills are the first step toward creating a more holistic behavioral health care system in Delaware. Ann Hoffman, WHYY News.
82 degrees, overcast, showers on the way this evening, then some clearing and then continuing overnight. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. And welcome back to Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute, home from visiting what is considered by many to be ground zero for overhead, out-of-this-world observing. Derek, indeed, welcome home. Where were you?
I was in Chile. That seems to be a very, very long strip of coast, and then mostly mountains from there. The locations where I was first in Santiago, and then in the northern sections of Chile, up near the northeastern corner.
And it's the mountains that are key to great observing.
And they have very, very smooth, stable, dry, and extremely clear air. And when you put all those factors together, along with how friendly the Chilean government is towards astronomical research, you end up with a place that's simply unparalleled with any other place around the world for observing.
What were some of the highlights of the work being done now?
Well, the projects that are going on now range everywhere from surveying the sky, you know, big broad surveys of the sky, to imaging of the sky using the largest and most advanced CCD detector anywhere in the world for any kind of telescope.
Using descriptives like largest and most advanced, does this render out-of-this-world telescopes like Hubble all but obsolete?
You know, this is a statement that I've been sort of using over the last several years, just understanding how telescopes have grown and developed over the last several decades and what their capability is when you put together the size of the instrument, the location of the instrument, with a new technology called adaptive optics. So what they're doing, essentially, is taking away all the turbulence in the sky above the telescope. And it opens completely new doors, new avenues, new methods to being able to see the night sky from the ground as a telescope in space would see it, even better than a telescope in space could see it.
Now, let's note, you didn't go merely as a tourist or even an observer. You had a role to play as an education ambassador. Explain.
Yeah, that's true. Part of the goals of what we were to try to do is to understand why Chile is considered to be the best location in the world for this, and to understand the vast career opportunities that there are available besides just astronomical research. It's stunning. It's like looking at a pyramid again, in like space exploration, where the astronaut is the lone person at the very tip top with all the other support underneath. The same is true for astronomy. You have the astronomical researcher that's actually pursuing a question, but it's supported by a vast, vast array of teams that help to make everything work. And I can't imagine that there could be, I'm sure there are, but I'm biased, I can't imagine that there could be much more rewarding than a career associated with such incredible equipment, doing the kind of investigative work about the origin and history of our universe, as is being done with these telescopes. It's just mind-boggling.
Derek, we have a moment left. Here's your chance to take the rest of us to school on this night, which apparently features the latest sunset of the year. What's available when the sky is finally darkened?
That's happening at around 8:34 p.m. tonight. We have great planets over on the western side of the sky just after sunset. The largest planet of the solar system glows brightly over there. You can't miss it. If you come back from that side of the sky to the left towards the east, you can find the constellation Scorpius. Three bright stars mark the head. Well, on the right side of the head, the western side, is the brilliant planet Mars. It's glowing beautifully rosy, pinkish color right now and easy to find. And then a little bit further to the left is dimmer and smaller, but still prominent Saturn, just on the other side of those three stars that mark at the head of the Scorpion. So right now we have the Milky Way coming across the sky right down towards the Scorpion, Saturn on one side of the head, Mars on the other side of the head, and if we continue over to the west, as I said, just after sunset, Jupiter.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up with Outer Space Ways Incorporated.
First, beer gardens, then pop-up beer gardens, and now Philadelphia has a traveling pop-up beer garden called Parks on Tap, and it'll travel across 14 Philadelphia parks this summer. The first destination is Schuylkill Banks at Walnut Street Bridge, where the garden opens Wednesday. The beer garden will leave Schuylkill next week, but if it's successful, it might set the stage for something more permanent in that location.
wanted to kind of test it, if you will. Maybe we need to think about more of a permanent program here.
That's Mark Wilkin, the city's park concessions manager. The park will keep traveling until early October. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. First-generation college students can face special challenges, and tomorrow evening we'll bring you one of their stories as part of our series, First Year. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.